Yay.
Finally.
Yeah.
City Council will come to order. Carla, can you please read the titles for both 897 resolution and emergency ordinance, Council Item 898?
897 recognized the ongoing importance of providing affordable health care to non-participants by working with its related health care service vendors. 898. Authorize 6 health and welfare contracts administered by the Bureau of Human Resources, Benefits, and Wellness Office, effective July 1, 2009, through June 30, 2014.
And just as with our structural improvements on housing or housing issues, we'll go through the commissioner in charge of housing, wellness, and health care issues from here on out will flow through Commissioner Fritz's office, who I've assigned wellness program, health care by extension. So in the future, I have to sign off on it, maybe by the charter, but we'll work harder to make sure that it goes through your office for approval first. With that, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and commissioners. My name is Kathy Bless, and today I will provide with you some background related to the benefit program, sharing with you some successes we've had in the past few years and with our self-insured medical plan costs. The ordinance for council action today seeks your approval of 5-year contracts with established vendors in support of the city's self-insured medical plan, as well as the insured medical, dental, vision, and flexible spending account plans to participants. The contract process began last December when we sought council approval for an extension on existing contracts to maintain employee benefit service levels during the SAP transition. Really, this is a second phase in that process, and appropriately so. Having updated contracts is essential both to the programs and the requirements of the SAP system. As we are all aware, benefit costs are significant and are included within the city's annual budget and 5-year financial forecasts. Funding for the plan are collected in 3 primary ways. We collect through contributions from each bureau on behalf of its employees. We collect employee premium share, which was initiated in 2004-05. And we collect the full premium payment from retiree and COBRA participants on the plan. To keep a close eye on plan costs and attempt to impact future cost increases, the city made a commitment supported by many unions to reduce medical cost trend increases by 3-5% by 2010. Emphasis on wellness programs and preventive care were initiated at the same time. The medical trend indicates the effects of medical price inflation, utilization, advances in technology, and plan design changes to the self-insured medical plan. What we can influence is changes in plan design, and in so doing, change utilization patterns. As shown above in the chart, or in front of you, we have made significant progress in lowering the medical trend rate, down from 14.95% in 2005 to what will be our plan year beginning July 1st, 2009 at 6.83%.
That's the rate?
That is the medical cost trend. That's an inflationary component that we base our rates on. We'll talk a bit more about how that's realized in our plan costs in just a moment. We continue to work on this emphasis with preventive care and other wellness activities. Reducing the medical trend is critical to holding down the cost for the city active employees, current and future eligible retirees. and factors attributable to the city's decrease in the medical trend would be a decrease in our large claims, an increase in generic drug use, and an increased awareness of chronic disease management. The graph also shown illustrates the monthly plan costs since 2004-05 for a family enrolled in the city self-insured plan, CityCorps, and then the insured plan, Kaiser. Lowering our medical trend, and this speaks to your question directly, has made a significant difference in the year-to-year increases in the cost the medical, the CityCorps plan has realized. And if we are lowering our inflationary trend, we don't have to be raising our monthly rates to make up that difference year over year. So in the chart, you will see that since 2007 and 8, we've had very low plan increases for our members on our self-insured plan, 4% in 2007-8, 3% in 8-09, and then again 3% in the plan year that is effective July 1st. Kaiser has moved also to a more experience-related pricing model instead of its previous community rating system, and we had a very favorable increase from Kaiser this year, too, of 4%. In comparison to other public entities, the City of Portland rates are favorable. The EE designation in the chart in front of you indicates the cost of single coverage for an employee. The family rates are also shown directly below it, and the columns shown across indicate the total cost of the plan, the employer contribution, the city's contributions towards those costs, and then the employee share. And again, by jurisdictions, we look pretty well in our single rate, and we look very favorable in our family costs. This also, this chart also depicts it in a different way. This is a family rate only, but certainly is a very favorable depiction of our costs. The city's employee premium share contribution is shown to be in the mid-range in comparison to other public entities. And this chart really depicts the total plan cost and the employer contribution as well as the employee share in the yellow. There are still two local jurisdictions that don't have employee premium share. So that's the reason why those bars are even.
What is PEB, Regents?
PEB is the Portland Employees Benefit Board. So it's state employees. We will continue to promote healthy lifestyles, look for ways to lower medical trend further, and promote preventive care and screenings for all participants. I would like you now to consider the adoption of this resolution and ordinance providing 5-year contracts to the city's benefit plans. And do you have any additional questions?
Well, I just, when you gave me the individual briefing, it's all coming back to me now. I was impressed with the progress that we had made in terms of trying to reduce the escalation of increase on the costs of our healthcare plans. And so I thought it would be a useful time as the SAP system requires us to put contracts into the system, a useful time to just sort of check in on that. And we've got a lot more work to do, which I look forward to hearing in the months ahead from Commissioner Fritz, but we've had some success, and I figured it was good to sort of air it out.
Absolutely.
I'm curious, was Commissioner Fritz chosen because she's the healthiest member of the council?
And she actually is trained in health care.
How many of you used your 15 minutes to run around the park blocks?
Not really.
I used my 15 minutes to get food.
I was running around City Hall trying to escape the clutches of one of my colleagues.
So, That counts, too. That counts. Yeah, it's exercise.
Off of the chart you showed of the comparative costs in other in our sister jurisdictions,
mm-hmm.
And I know there's been, for some time a sort of a conversation at a very abstract level about what would happen if the city of Portland, Metro, the county, and all these governmental partners came together and created one big powerhouse of demand. Is that something down the road that we're still going to take a look at to see whether our collective buying power can bring down some costs?
Well, it's an interesting question. And I'm going to let Yvonne answer that.
I didn't mean it to be a trick question.
Do you want me to answer it? You want me to give the unvarnished assessment?
What?
Okay. Yeah, this has been an idea that, you know, as long as I've been here, I think somebody on council, including myself at one time, has asked that question. And as I've come to realize, what I think stands in the way of it is, I mean, it's probably a compelling idea, but I think my impression is the bargaining units in each of those jurisdictions have a certain amount of authority that accrues to them by being able to have some say over their health plans. And that is my assessment of what...
That's changing, though.
The challenge is, I mean, Commissioner Stossman is correct. The challenge is getting all the various employee groups across all of those jurisdictions to agree upon what their health plan should look like, and that's a challenge. But there are some efforts on the way, and that ASME has been heading up to look at those things. And so we don't know in the end what agreement. The other
at least along the AFSCME bargaining units, which are substantial in the tied into the city of Portland and Metro, there's substantial opportunity.
Yeah. And so,
Washington County is mostly SEIU, so it's harder in Washington
right.
County.
It's harder with Washington County. The other issue is also for us is to look, as Kathy told you, that we've made tremendous gains in reducing our trends. And so we've made tremendous gains in promoting health and education to reduce our trend costs. And so we don't want to, well, we would be very careful or cautious about whether or not we'd be accumulating what type of adverse impact, depending on what the utilization and the age and the condition of the various workforces. And so,
just building, Yvonne, on what the mayor said, last spring when I was a candidate and had a chance to talk to, I think, about just about every labor organization that has a public or private role right. in our community, the one thing I got the sense they were pretty much united on was this notion of creating some powerhouse and using the bargaining power, the buying power of a larger entity. So maybe it's not something that's realistic in the short term, but I would hope that we continue to look at it as an
option. It could be, except we also have to figure out what that break point is. I mean, we've actually... let's say, for example, our prescription drugs, the way we do it, we're in a very large pool. And if you combine the state and the county with the city, we don't get a price break because we're already in a very large pool nationally.
Are we in the National League of Cities pool, or what are we in?
No, we are. We have our prescription drug coverage through Caremark. Okay. So we have an individual agreement.
But those are things that we're continuing to look at, and we're continuing to look you know, toward other jurisdictions. And it'll be an opportunity, something that we'll look at and do some assessment on as we move toward bargaining so that when we come in, we'll be able to give you some recommendations on what we think we should be doing there.
Thank you.
So for the first time, we're a pool because the bargaining is all happening at a similar time. AFSCME has shown a real interest in this among its bargaining units. Ironically, one of the challenges for us is we've actually seen a lot of improvement that is different than the trends in some of the others we might partner with. And so on pieces, we might be able to show some pieces of coverage. We might be able to show some improvement in other areas we might not. But it's a real live opportunity in front of us for the first time.
Sure. Certainly, we need to look at it.
Thank you.
If I may speak to that point, the other exciting thing that's happening is in the legislature where the Oregon Health Board is being created. And in July, we're going to be inviting Representative Nolan and Representative Greenlick to come and talk to us about how that provides health care for Multnomah County's children and also has the potential for looking at statewide pooling of resources and making sure that we're getting value for money. But I want to emphasize again, the city's medical trends are only going up 9.2%, down from 14.95% in 5.6, and that's a lot less than than statewide the trends in increased in health insurance. And I think one of the reasons for that is not only Kathy Bless and her team and HR, but I've been going to the monthly Labor Management Benefit Committee meetings, and I am so impressed at the, because the employees helping to manage their benefits and being cost effective with them is really a good model for making sure that we get value for money. And there was one particular, one of the first meetings that I went to, they were discussing prescription drug coverage and which vendor to go with. And I'm thinking, well, I'm going to have to restrain myself as a registered nurse for 27 years. I'm going to have to really make sure that I let everybody there have their say before I leap in and say what I think. And I was very, very impressed with the thoroughness of the discussion. I actually ended up having nothing to say at the end because everything had been delved into so carefully in terms of benefits to the employees, cost effectiveness, different options, and it's a really good process. I'm excited about working with not only the Labor Management Benefits Committee, but also the Wellness Committee. We have decided we're going to be meeting monthly instead of quarterly, and greatly enhancing and including employees in figuring out what are the most cost-effective and desired benefits that increase wellness. Because part of the reason that our health costs are down is because we're putting focus in preventative care and in exercise programs and other things that reduce the need for services. And so I'm excited about that process and being involved in it, and I thank Mayor Adams for assigning that to me.
Any other council discussion? Anyone wishes to testify on the resolution council item 897 or the emergency ordinance number 898? Carla, would you please call the roll on 897?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I just want to also note that we are continuing to work to achieve better communication between the Labor Management Benefit Committee, the Wellness Staff, and the Wellness Committee. And to that end, we will be having a council work session relatively shortly on this whole topic to keep you informed and involve you in those decisions. And I thank Kathy Bless for taking on this program and keeping me informed. Nicole Guilfoy has done a great job of making herself available to different shifts and different bureaus, including traveling out to bureaus who don't come downtown. And these programs decrease the city's health care costs. And I thank the benefits and wellness staff and all the bureau liaisons for all their hard work and effort in keeping our employees and their families healthy. Aye.
Adams.
Great job, team. Thank you. Aye. Please call the roll for emergency ordinance 898.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
And we will continue to work to decrease the costs. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 898 is approved. Can you please read the title for purchasing report, council item 899?
Accept bid of Oregon State Bridge Construction, Inc. for the North Ledbetter Extension Overcrossing Project for $5,441,721.
So the good news is this came in 29% below the engineer's estimate. The bad news is, from my perspective, is that the MWESB participation is miserable.
And good afternoon, Mayor Adams.
Mr. Bear.
Member of City Council, I'm Jeff Bear with the Bureau of Purchases. And because this is a federal aid transportation project, we defer to the federal DBE, the Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program. And ODOT, after they conducted their analysis of the type of work that was to be completed, established a 2% DBE goal. The low bid from the Oregon State Bridge Construction Contractor, who is located out of state in Oregon, in their bid response achieved that goal and actually went above it to a 2.42% DBE participation. And the divisions of work that they are going to be working in are electrical, landscaping, and flagging.
Could ODOT raise that?
It's up to them to go through their analysis to determine what that goal is.
So it has to be based on the a legal
availability.
Predicate of availability? Okay.
And type of work.
Other council discussion? Anyone here wishes to testify on council calendar item 899, purchasing report? Do I hear a motion to approve the report?
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to approve the purchasing report. Can you please call the roll on 899?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Reluctantly, aye. 899 is approved. Can you please read the title for purchasing report, council calendar item 900?
Accept bid of Global Diving and Salvage, Inc. for the Bull Run Dam 1 Outlet Works Improvement Phase 2 project in the amount of $786,506.
Mr. Baer.
And we're here before you to request authorization to enter into a contract for the Bull Run Dam Outlet Works Improvements, and this is Phase 2 of the project, to Global Diving and Salvage in the amount of $786,506. There is 0% MW and ESB participation on this project, partially due to there was only two divisions of work that we identified as potential MWESB subcontracting, one in concrete work and one in crane services. There is only one certified women-owned business in crane services. The contractor contacted that firm and decided not to use them. There were five MWSBs in concrete, and they did not get any subcontract bids from any of those five subcontractors, mostly because of the difficulty and the complexity of the work that they're doing and requiring to have vertical experience on the surface of the dam. And Mary Ellen Collentine is here from the Water Bureau in case there are project-specific questions.
Well, I was just, if you could just follow up a little bit, you said there was a women-owned crane company, and the contractor decided not to use them.
Correct. They actually received a lower bid from a different crane operator, and mostly it's because of the cost, increased cost involved, because they're actually doing in-water work with diving and construction.
Other council discussion? Anyone here wish to testify on council calendar item 900, purchasing report? Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Council calendar item 900 is approved. Unless there are objections, I'd like to move council calendar item 901 to be the very last item we consider this afternoon after consideration of council calendar item 908. Hearing no objections, so moved. Can you please read the title for regular ordinance council calendar item 902?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County Animal Services to provide funds for enforcement of leash and scoop laws in city parks.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Mark Warrington from Portland Parks and Recreation. And the ordinance before you is to fund an IGA with Multnomah County Animal Services for one FTE animal control officer to enforce animal rules and laws in parks. Park visitors, education, and rules enforcement have always been a key element in Portland Parks' Dogs in Parks program. Multnomah County animal control officers work with park rangers, park neighbors, other park staff to educate park users. They bring the ability to write citations when necessary and can help us deal with other situations such as dog bite incidents, dangerous animals, and other things where we need fully qualified and equipped animal control officers. This program has proven to be successful since 2003, and we need to continue it in order to keep the parks clean and safe for everyone. Be happy to answer any questions you have.
And I want to thank you for sitting through the council session thus far. Any council discussion? Anyone wish to testify? Oh, council discussion.
So we have just the one enforcement officer for the whole city?
Yeah, they work. The park staff monitors. They go for the voluntary compliance. This includes the park rangers. They do all they can. But folks that need a little higher level of customer service that would understand a ticket better, we have that provision through this program.
What a delightful way of phrasing
higher
it.
Higher level.
So in other words, the rangers and the parks employees would then page the person. And
they work closely together. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right, no one wishes to testify. 902 moves to second reading next week. Can you please read the title? It's a second reading on a contract amendment, council calendar item 903.
Amend contract with Walker Macy for design and construction administration of the Waterfront Park, Ankeny Plaza, and Street Improvements Project.
Please call the roll.
Fish.
Last week when we heard the staff presentation on this contract amendment, each of my colleagues raised I thought, very probing questions about the purchasing process in general and whether the 25% threshold, which triggers council review of any contract amendment, provides an adequate check on contract increases. Mary Adams, I believe I heard you suggest last week that the Bureau of Purchases might consider doing a work session in the fall to take a closer look at the city's contracting rules generally. And I would certainly welcome that opportunity. I think Commissioner Fritz also expressed an interest. I think that would be welcome. I think that also when you look at this particular situation, and we recognize that some of the increases over a multi-year period were driven by a construction contract managed by PDC, I think it may be fruitful to include in our work session folks from PDC so we can do it on a joint basis. In any event, I've asked both Parks and PDC to debrief both contracts and to look for lessons learned and to provide some feedback for me going forward. I want to assure my colleagues that on the park that is currently being developed in South Waterfront, Carruthers Park, I have previously and will renew a commitment that we will come in at or below budget on that park, and we have sufficient protocols in place to make sure that we're using taxpayer monies wisely. I want to thank again Doug Macy and Walker Macy for their excellent work on the project, my colleagues for their very constructive feedback on this process. The finished product is magnificent, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. That was a great summary, and I agree with everything. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 903 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, Council Calendar Item 904?
Authorize the Bureau of Environmental Services to enter into agreements for the conveyance of properties located within floodplain restoration target areas.
Do we need to? This is
first reading.
It says emergency.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This ordinance authorizes the city to.
I was suspended in time there for a minute.
That was a Montana pause. I was waiting 30 seconds.
That was a North Dakota pause.
Randy, would you make a note of that? That's a slight variation on what we've come to expect. And we should not jump to any conclusions on that one. That seemed like a more of deflecting as opposed to capturing your thoughts.
Commissioner Saltzman.
This ordinance authorizes the city to purchase three tax lots in the Johnson Creek floodplain as part of the Bureau's Bureau of Environmental Services Willing Seller Program. The purpose of this program is to help property owners who've been adversely affected by flooding to move out of harm's way, and also to reduce damage from flooding. The city's cost for the purchases, closing, and removing structures and utilities is $860,000 and is budgeted. I urge approval.
Any discussion from council? Anyone wishes to testify on emergency ordinance, council calendar item 904? Carly, will you please call the vote?
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Making progress. Good work. Aye. 904 is approved. Can you please read the title for regular ordinance, council calendar item 905?
Amend intergovernmental agreement with the Institute for Tribal Government at Portland State University for services associated with the Portland Harbor Superfund site.
Rick, do you want to explain this?
Mr. Applegate, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and members of the City Council. One of the real bright spots in Portland Harbor Superfund, and we're always on the lookout for them, has been our reinvigorated relationship.
What's your name?
I'm sorry, Rick Applegate, the Portland Harbor Superfund Administrator.
Rules.
Sorry. One of the real bright spots in our work on the Portland Harbor Superfund has been our reinvigorated working relationship with tribal governments that have become even more interested in the health of the lower Willamette River since the listing of Portland Harbor as a federal Superfund site. We've been working with six tribal governments for a number of years now, and in the course of that work, we've had the able assistance of Portland State University's Institute for Tribal Government initially working with former Congresswoman Elizabeth Furse, and more recently with Roy Samsel, who has had a number of leadership positions with a number of tribal governments in the Northwest. This ordinance proposes the extension of that working arrangement at the level of $30,000 or up to $40,000 in the next few years. And one thing I'd like to be clear about in the future of this contract work, we see some real opportunities to work with the new Office of Healthy and Working Rivers. The tribal governments are primarily interested in the Superfund for now, but time after time they've emphasized that they're interested in restoring ecological function in the Lower Willamette River, and they're increasingly intrigued by green development opportunities, having discussed with the Bureau, for example, some of the innovative stormwater management programs that we have underway now.
That sounds great.
It's been going very, very well.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks. Any questions? Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Anybody want to testify? If not, Carla, please call the roll.
This is a non-emergency.
Passes to a second reading. Read item 906.
Recognize the global financial crisis, statewide cuts in programs and services, and ongoing fiscal constraints for fiscal year 2009-10 and 2010-11, City of Portland budgets, and freeze merit raises in fiscal year 2009-10 for non-represented city employees.
Mr. Fritz.
Thank you. This resolution recognizes the unprecedented economic challenges we are facing in our country, state, and city, and calls for freezing merit pay for non-represented city employees for the fiscal year starting July 1, 2009. Under this proposal, money that is currently budgeted for merit raises would be set aside in special funds in each bureau. If it, it saves an estimated $2.7 million to reduce layoffs in non-represented jobs, either in this in the 2009 or 10 fiscal years. If the economy recovers by the end of the 2009-10 fiscal year cycle and no job cuts to non-represented employees are proposed in the 2010-11 budget, then non-represented employees would be eligible for merit increases in June 2010, retroactive to the anniversary date for financial year 9-10. The resolution also calls for a council work session on merit pay policy implementation no later than the October 31st of this year. The global financial crisis is not over. I believe we must prepare for still tougher times in the next year, even while hoping for the best. We have currently about 1,475 non-represented employees. Of those, 977, or approximately 66%, would be eligible for merit rate increases in financial year 9-10. 810 employees, or approximately 55% of the non-represented employees, will be eligible for 4.1% pay increases in financial year 2009-10. Based on the OMF's analysis, putting aside this merit pay increase money, which is already budgeted in the 2009-10 budget, would reserve an estimated $2.7 million, which I propose would be used for saving non-represented jobs. So the employees who would be sacrificing would be getting the benefits either by getting their merit pay if we don't need it for saving jobs or by saving non-represented jobs. I realize that this proposal creates disparities between represented and non-represented employees. As a 23-year union member, I continue to pay dues to the Oregon Nurses Association. I understand that as an employer, I must honor union contracts. The unions will make their own choices in how they want to manage this crisis, and I encourage union members to talk with their stewards if they're interested in participating in this strategy. I actually based part of the way that I've set it up on Multnomah County, where AFSCME Local 88 were the first to step up and say that they wanted to freeze their pay in order to save jobs. Other unions and non-represented employees there followed suit, and the jobs were saved in those categories. Another union decided not to join the strategy and suffered more cuts in this year's budget in Multnomah County. I was elected by the people of Portland to make prudent decisions in managing both union and non-represented employees. This resolution takes action on the part of the city budget where we as a city council have responsibility outside of union contracts. Many city employees have already been laid off in the current budget. This morning we heard about folks in parks and development services. I believe the ongoing financial crisis demands prudent choices in making savings throughout the fiscal year in order to avoid more layoffs in 2010-11. We need to continue considering a wide range of cost-cutting measures in the current crisis, so I'm presenting this one for discussion.
Mayor, I have a motion I'd like to make. It's a motion to postpone the resolution indefinitely. It would require a second, and it is debatable.
Second.
May I be heard?
It's been moved and seconded. We're open to debate on the motion to table.
It's a motion to postpone indefinitely.
Sorry, a motion to postpone indefinitely.
And I want to begin by complimenting my colleague, Commissioner Fritz, who, like my mother, is a registered nurse, which is, I think, the reason we have such an affinity, for bringing this resolution forward. But I want to express respectfully that it's premature. I have not had a lot of time to review this, and it is not the fault of the proponent, but that we have been busy with other things at council. But I have received a briefing from the city's HR team, and I've tried to scramble to get as much information as I could. And I just want to summarize what, for me, are the concerns. Again, I don't in any way question the intent of this, and I am second to no one on this panel in my desire to look for prudent cost savings. My Parks Bureau took a 5% cut, which has resulted in layoffs. I declined a COLA personally and would look for other ways to make smart budget decisions. But I'll tell you, for me, why I think this is premature. The first is we just completed a comprehensive budget cycle for 2009-2010. And there was a lot of time, a lot of energy, multiple hearings, and this issue was never placed before us during the normal budget process as something for us to actively consider. If we were to consider something like a fundamental basic change in our policies with respect to compensation, I would want to do it in the normal budget process because I would want to understand all of its ramifications. I'd want to understand all the details, and I'd want it to be applied as broadly as possible. So I guess you could say I have a timing and a procedural concern that we're doing this outside of our normal budget. The second concern I have, and you've alluded to it, is that it essentially says to less than 10% of our total workforce, 60% of the 20% of our non-represented people are covered by this resolution, that they should be treated differently than everybody else. 20% of our workforce is non-represented. This resolution would apply to only 60% of the 20. If my math is right, it's about 10%. And I think as a matter of basic fairness, when we're dealing with policy questions like this, I'm uncomfortable targeting just a small subset of employees. Third, as I've talked to our HR people about this, what I've come to appreciate is there are some unintended consequences. And one of them has to deal with, it deals with the retention side of the ledger of people who have not hit the highest rung of the ladder, who we would want to reward for exemplary service and at least have the discretion to give them a merit pay increase based, as you know, on the protocol, which is there must be an evaluation and determination of a compelling reason. But there's another category of people that I can't in my own mind square, which is someone hired a year ago today and a year ago from July 1st, because the one would get the increase, would be eligible for the increase, and the second would not. Fourth, I've asked for some clarity in the last 24 hours about the figure of $2.7 million, and what I've been told is that that number is very squishy and that, in fact, the proposed savings here could be as little as half of that, and in part because, as everyone on this council knows, our merit pay system is not an entitlement, and it doesn't happen automatically. And in fact, it will not be processed by HR unless accompanied by an evaluation and a recommendation for some merit pay. So it does not automatically kick in. And frankly, each of us as commissioners in charge have the discretion to decide whether merit pay is awarded within our bureaus. As I noted, I believe that the differential treatment of new hires and relatively low-paid employees is troubling, but I'm also frankly concerned about the differential treatment between represented and non-represented. Finally, I'm not sure it's needed. Again, as I've been informed, as commissioners in charge, we get to make judgments within our bureaus, and we have discretion as to how the merit pay procedure works. Finally, in talking to our HR team about what lies ahead, I have been told that starting in September, October, which roughly corresponds, Commissioner Fritz, to the date that you've laid out as the time you'd like us to look more broadly at these policies, we will be briefed on the question of our labor strategy, and we'll also be briefed on options for how we deal with any unforeseen further erosion of the economy. I would feel more comfortable as someone who shares your values and your intention but believes it's premature. I would feel more comfortable to have all that available evidence in the early fall, plus a chance to understand all the consequences of changing any of our policies with respect to compensation, and frankly a chance to talk to our labor partners if necessary about shared sacrifice between both represented and non-represented. For those reasons, I believe that this matter is premature, and I've made my motion to postpone indefinitely with the intention of this being brought back in September, October.
May I respond?
Please.
As you know, I started circulating this motion several weeks ago, and I understand that you've been busy with other things, but it was put out for review, and I modified it in response to the feedback that I received. I did raise it during the budget process. I had some discussions with the mayor and with HR during the budget process. And then we came in, and as you remember, as of the end of April, we were looking at an $8 million hole in our budget, and even after the cuts, and that we, at that point, were not expecting to get the $12 million in one-time money. So as late as the end of April, it was still in play, and because we had the one-time money, it seemed like the pressure was off. But the pressure isn't off. We just this morning heard about 100 or more development services staff being laid on, which is indicative that the economy is not recovering as fast as we should, as it could be, and that we need to start planning for tight times next year. Yes, I respect that it doesn't apply to everyone, and my motion resolution recognizes that and offers other employees the option of taking the voluntary furlough days. But it does apply to the people who are non-represented and who are not covered by a binding union contract. I'm not going to tell I didn't feel that it's appropriate to make this contingent on other employees doing the same thing, just as Commissioner Leonard this morning did his motion on the non-represented employees, hoping that the union employees will come along and want the same strategy, but not waiting for that because the needs are now. In terms of unintended consequences with retention, times are really tough. And we had 107 applicants for the Rivers manager job. I had 300 applicants for three jobs in my office in January. It's just for 1 year. And there's a lot of benefits, as we heard with the city's healthcare policy. There's benefits to being a city employee that are above and beyond compensation. You mentioned anniversary date. The reason that I was bringing this today and that I feel it's important to vote on it today is by HR's recommendation, because then it starts fiscal year July 1 and June 30th of next year. It catches everybody's anniversary date once. So wherever you set the cutoff date to start and end something like this, somebody's always going to be the day before and somebody's always going to be the day after. Human Resources recommendation was to do this by the fiscal year. I can't answer to the $2.7 million being squishy. That's the number that the Office of Management and Finance gave to me. So, yes, there is some we don't know for sure that that's the amount, and that's why I'm not promising that. I'm saying put it in a line item in each bureau's budget so that if there are cuts in non-represented employees in that bureau needed in the next year, that we've got ongoing money to take care of those employees and to continue to employ them. I'm troubled by your mention of the discretion by each commissioner that we can give or not give merit raises within our bureaus. That's one of the very reasons I'm proposing this, so that I don't think it should be based on the allocation that the mayor made as to which bureaus under which commissioner get merit raises and which don't. We should have a policy that is clearly thought out and which designates how sacrifices made by a group of employees benefit that group of employees. I disagree that it's not needed. I think it's highly needed, and we should be planning now for savings. If we don't need them, it goes back to the employees, and they're not they have the loss of that income for a year, or a maximum of a year, but it would eventually either go back to help those particular employees or to save those particular employees in the next budget year. And as far as waiting for the September-October labor strategy, each group has to be allowed, is an entity within itself, and it's unfortunate that the non-represented employees don't have a structure that they have elected leaders to be able to talk with me about this proposal. Otherwise, I would have asked them. It actually was generated by the in some measure, the non-represented employees of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement voluntarily suggested a 10% cut in their salaries in the 5% cut for the ONI budget in order to be able to save the jobs of their colleagues. And after we gave the COLA increase, which I supported doing the cost of living adjustment because I don't see that as an increase, I see that as keeping pace with inflation, we all got many emails from citizens wondering how we could justify that. I can justify that. I can't justify giving even the most excellent and the most lowly paid city employee a 4.1% raise in this economy. I think we should look at other strategies. We could give more paid vacation days to new employees which would be cost neutral to the city, but we could reward them in other ways. I asked in my memo that I sent to every city employee for suggestions, and that was one of that came in, to give extra paid vacation days to the younger employees or the newer employees. But I have one of my bureau directors who tells me that bureau director is not yet maxed out in his salary range because of the way the salary ranges keep moving up. So I am proposing this for many of the reasons that you are suggesting that we postpone it, for equity and to make sure that we're making this decision in as prudent manner as possible.
I would just like to speak in support of the resolution. I mean, it is tough times, and it's tough to do something like take away merit raises for a year. But I think, as Commissioner Fritz just pointed out, we did unanimously vote to give all of our employees a 2.8% cost of living adjustment. And, you know, we all got a lot of flack on that. And I think the idea now that some employees will effectively be getting 6 or 7% increases in their salary, counting the COLA and the merit raise, is just something that the public can't countenance right now. Our sister employees in the school districts who are not getting any COLAs or merit raises and doing mandatory furloughs, it just creates a bitter division. And we can always talk about tackling these issues in the future, but I do agree, as the discussion this morning over the Bureau of Development Services clearly points out, these times are upon us now. And I am not encouraged by what our forecasts are going to look like next year in terms of revenues. And I think the unemployment rate is not going to look, unfortunately, much better than it looks now. And I think we need to start taking these actions this fiscal year. And the other thing I know is if we have these discussions with our bargaining units, one of the first things that will always come up, it's the chicken and egg. Well, what are you doing about what are the managers doing? Where's their sacrifice? So let's get the sacrifice going right now. Let's make the sacrifice for the managers. That'll better position us to have those discussions with our bargaining units, our collective bargaining units, as we set the stage for what looks to be an equally dire next fiscal year. So I appreciate Commissioner Fritz for bringing this up. I do support it, and I do think it's a wise investment at this time.
Commissioner Leonard.
Thank you. Commissioner Saltzman's reference to these as managers is, I think, part of the problem in this debate. I work very closely with my bureaus. I've been accused of micromanaging my bureaus. And what that means to me is I'm up there all the time talking to people, so maybe I'm more familiar than I should be, but I don't think so with how my bureaus function. These are not managers. In fact, at the Fire Bureau, the managers of the Fire Bureau, the chief, the deputy chiefs, the division chiefs, are all at the top of their range. This does not impact them. It does impact the clerical staff who work below them. Cindy Gawke, who a number of you know, went to work at the Fire Bureau. This impacts her, but she's a manager. But according to her, she manages women beneath her that are all non-rep administrative staff. And as I've done my research, the administrative staff that are affected by this are, by and large, women. Some of them single, some of them married, many of them single parents. Those classifications are not managers. They are non-represented. Let me give you some examples of who those are. Home security specialist is a non-rep position affected by this. Record center assistant. Children's Fund Commissioner's Administrative Support Specialist, Legal Assistant, Clerk to the City Council, Paralegals, Deputy City Attorneys, Volunteer Program Coordinator. And I've talked to the staff at BDS about this because some of you today are referencing that as justification. Let me tell you what their reaction is. This adds insult to injury. At that bureau. They are watching their colleagues walk out the door. I'm expecting more of non-reps than ever, as you saw today. I asked them, and they agreed to take 2 weeks without pay. I've told them that as opposed to working less, they'll probably work more than they ever have. And it hits me particularly bad because non-represented folks are the most vulnerable employees we have in this city. Three or four courageous ones sent emails back to all of us pointing out the inequities in what was being requested of them, but the vast majority of them certainly haven't communicated to us because of the nature of who they are. And they are not managers. They are typically non-represented administrative folks who fear for their jobs. But I have to tell you, I flirted with voting for this because I thought, well, what better organizing tool than to take a whole bunch of employees, the most of whom are women, and tell them they take a pay freeze while they're working for men who run the organization that don't. As a former union organizer, that struck me as a fabulous opportunity to go in and organize a bunch of people who, I will tell you, do not meet the criteria for being exempt employees. They're not managers. There's no legal reason that they're not in a union now other than they haven't been organized. So this is unfair on a number of levels. Having said that, I've talked with Amanda about her goals. I've heard what she said here today. And I don't think her intent was to cause the inequity this would inevitably cause. I do think that it's appropriate, not just because of bad economic times, but it doesn't hurt for us to sit down and analyze our compensation system, who is impacted. The whole idea behind merit raises, which, by the way, merit raises, I think we ought to change the name of. It's creating all by itself, I think, problems, because merit raises are nothing more than step increases. And up till 1992, those that were non-represented got the same step increases those that are represented get by virtue of their service. So a firefighter that's hired is hired at a certain amount. After 6 months, that firefighter gets an increase. After a year, that firefighter gets another increase, and an annual increase until they top out at 5 years. Those are step increases. That person's represented. The council in 1990 began a process that culminated in 1992, I remember because I was the president of the firefighters at the time, to change that step increase process for non-represented and started calling it merit pay. And they said, well, when that annual raise comes up, we've been automatically giving it to employees. Let's sit down and use that as an opportunity to tell the employee how they're doing. Do they need to improve? Do they need encouragement in some areas? Or do we just need to tell them they're doing a good job? And then at that time, if they meet our criteria as the manager, they'll get the increase. When I came to council in 2002, I will tell you that there were a number of bureaus using those annual opportunities to have evaluations that weren't taken advantage of and just automatically given the increase. I didn't think that was appropriate. I remember Commissioner Saltzman agreeing that wasn't appropriate. And as a consequence, a year or so later, we adopted a policy that said if the bureaus do not submit an evaluation of each person that is a non-represented employee that qualifies for a merit increase, they don't get it. So BHR requires an evaluation of any employee before they grant the raise. So I think it's important for us, if we're going to do something like this, to understand the facts and take the time to understand who it impacts, because I'm quite certain there is nobody on this council who wants to inadvertently create inequities amongst genders of our workforce or anybody else amongst the workforce. We want our folks to be treated fair, and I feel a special obligation, and I always have from the day I've got here, to reach out more to the non-represented folks that I work with than even the union folks. They have a structure to represent themselves. They have people that will advocate for them, and I feel like it's my responsibility to make sure that people under our bureaus are treated fairly. And my concern, Commissioner Fritz, is this fails that test, and I can't support it.
We have a 2 o'clock time certain, and respectfully, I would call the question.
May I just respond to what Commissioner Lennon said?
I think she should be able to.
Of course.
Thank you.
And we'll have a chance to make comments when we vote as well. Okay. But Commissioner Fish.
And Fritz, close enough.
Sorry, Commissioner Fritz.
I greatly appreciate and am very impressed with the work of city employees. I've learned a lot over the last 18 years from city employees, and since I've been inside City Hall for the last 6 months, even more impressed and thrilled with the quality of work that public employees do. And I recognize that this is asking for more sacrifice of a particular group of public employees, and that many have family members and friends who have lost jobs, so they indeed may be struggling even more. I've heard from at least a couple of dozen employees in response to my direct email. Most, I would say at least half of them, were supportive and saying thank you for proposing this. The ones that were not supportive, I wrote back and explained what it is. And most of those, then when I explained, said, oh, we didn't understand. This is designed to save non-represented jobs. The savings are put into a special line item in each bureau, and if they're not needed to save non-represented jobs, then the employees would be eligible to apply for merit raises in June of 2010, retroactive to their anniversary date. So it doesn't create a divide between the unions and the non-represented, because it specifically uses the money for the purpose that it's currently budgeted for. I do think we need to have the work session on merit raises and to whether they're by right or whether they're for merit. And I believe we need to have a policy that's equitable across the council to decide what we're going to do in the ones where we have discretion this year. Coming up, starting July 1st, each one of us is going to be making decisions within our bureaus about whether we give merit raises or not. And I can certainly make that decision for the employees within my bureau. I certainly don't want to disrespect those employees, and I think I'm not going to go there on the agenda issue, because I believe that many people understand what dire straits we are in and that we need to make economies now just in case, and that's why I propose this.
All right. The question has been called. Carla, would you please call the vote?
Fish?
I'm going to support the motion to postpone for the reasons I previously stated. I think Commissioner Fritz is well-intentioned in bringing this forward, but we just voted on a budget for the next fiscal year, which is balanced. This effort, I think, unfairly targets 1 in 10 employees of the city to establish potential savings against a potential further erosion of our budget. I think it has unintended consequences. I think something like this needs to be vetted and looked at system-wide. And I'm frankly concerned that it treats people differently for reasons that I can't fully explain. Commissioner Fritz has every right to bring this resolution, and I have joined with her in supporting a budget which resulted in some tough savings across bureaus and particularly quite a lot of pain within my bureau, Parks. I rejected a COLA, and I am prepared to work earnestly across our represented and non-represented units this fall to find additional savings. But respectfully, I don't think this is the right time or the right approach. So I vote aye on the motion.
Saltzman.
Well, again, I appreciate Commissioner Fritz bringing this forward. I do think it is an appropriate cautionary step that, and prudent step that we should take. And I also think that, you know, we can talk about this in all the lofty terms or all the down-to-earth terms or all the gender-based terms we want. The bottom line is we're okaying 7% pay raises